بوابة يمكن الاعتبارات وسط هذا العلم أنه is perhaps best captured in the subculture of the live clothing items. This is the way of saying that perhaps in the 1980s, the first historian looking at the summarized life in our decade will be better to look at those folk culture representations than we would to look at newspapers or formal books. The folk representations of which I speak are chiefly toy buttons and paper stickers. More of the day, discussing the eclipse or demise of old-style Christian liberalism, I reference first the three other play buttons and the three tortoises. Not so many buttons, but they still have a lot to say to us. And then we have to be afraid of whatever happened to the Christian liberalism in both politics and theology. The first is the button that says nostalgia isn't what it used to be. And the reminder that even when one takes refuge from the present and begin to look back at life in earlier and supposedly earlier decades, we are somewhat disillusioned. Not much happens to move our world forward. The second of the cases, the present, is administered to by another lapel button that we've seen. It says, I am neither for nor against apathy, which again describes much of the mood of the early 1970s, as far as many of the people who have been in the 1960s movements have been concerned, and almost the whole range of what had been called Christian liberalism has to face this problem. The third of those cases, having to do with the future, picks up a graffito that says tomorrow has been cancelled for lack of interest. Also, we have this in common, that they are not a lot to help disguise the hurt that frustrated people who would otherwise verge on panic would experience if they think deeply about life. The lapel button provides the beginning of dialogue. One reaches out with a handshake and grabs someone else's button, and soon there's a chuckle, a little sense of ironic distance, and then satirical advisement, and before long, people can pick up the pieces back to the drawing boards and view their bags unleashed in the world. Well, both the lapel button is another art form that we diagnosed as being the more militant, ready to close off dialogue instead of open it. The bumper sticker, which was seen as the best in the automobile ahead of us roars away from us on all cylinders, spitting exhaust at us, and telling us, in effect, so there, too, while we fumble with the gears back at the stoplight behind them. The bumper sticker, as far as I can tell, is usually the consolidation of society's belief in what we may call the formal system, the status quo, that world against which Christian liberalism demanded itself, that world which people purportedly believe whether they do or not because they don't know alternatives. Henry Belloc's well-known line, so always keep a hold on this for fear of finding something worse, is applicable here. And so we hold on to this, we hold on to an old society, an old way of putting it together, and we elect candidates for high office and low office, who will somehow keep that formal system together, the formal system which withstood the radicals of the 1960s, the formal system which didn't bend when liberals tried to alter it gradually, the formal system which outlasted the counterculture of the mystical millennium and the age of Aquarius. What do these bumper stickers tell us? Militantly, love it or leave it, implies that the nation we've known is put together the way nations should be put together. Or register communists, not firearms, is a way of telling us that the violence that we've chartered in domestic circles in our world is necessary for self-protection, for fitting masculinity, or for allowing for freedom in case we should be invaded or whatever. One of the bumper stickers that remind us that next time we're in trouble we should consult a hippie instead of a policeman, and we'll find out what kind of trouble we're in. All of these are reminders of the fact that despite all the efforts of the previous 10 years, the world had not necessarily changed, but it had held its sticker is the thumbing of one's nose at the people in the rear guard, telling them don't try to change it. These opening remarks suggest a kind of a cynicism which I don't really intend to project. I hope they are repertorially accurate, though I wish they did not have to be. Rather, I would suggest that these purple stickers, in defense of the formal system, also disguise a different set of hurts, and that is that people are not getting out of this formal system what they thought they were. They have invested greatly in it, and all of the small. We do not win our wars, we do not abolish our ghettos, we do not solve our economic problems, we do not bridge the gap between generations, we do not draw closer together in our style, across race, and sex world. But until something else comes along, we have no security but to look backward and to hold to it. Contrast the mode of the lapel button versus the bumper sticker with the mode of, say, 10 years earlier. I often like to compare that moment to the time in the 19th century to which the philosopher Alfred North White had referred when he said, it was a time when wise men hoped, and as yet no circumstance had arisen to throw doubt upon the ground of such hope. Between the time to which he referred, and the 1960s, of course, only such circumstances had intervened. World War I and II and the Great Depression. Satire has taught us moral effluence and suburbanization, leading to its own satiety and disappointment. But something there is about a culture that makes it possible for it creatively to forget. And we entered a period very aware of our problems, late Cold War, early space age, mid racial integration times. And many people felt that we were well read, wise men hoped, because wise men read. It was a good following that the torch had been passed to another generation. And many Christian liberals began to speak almost uncritically in terms of various kinds of utopias, secular cities, no creations as metropolises. No circumstances had yet arisen to throw doubt upon the grounds of such hope in Whitehead terms. And the church, a rather frail institution, somewhat dispersed around the world, but still around the world, seemed well poised and on the verge of being well led and full of good followers to take part. I was down short not long ago when a friend told me that he had joined the church because of that promise. As an adult, he said, he never wanted to be uptight, crabby, repressive, and legalistic church, but there was a moment of its opening that drove him. I said, what ever happened? I used to read all those books you recommend. I used to pay attention to a lot of the people who lived there. I cut my theological path away. Not awful and tough, and had his new heroes like Pope John and Martin Luther King, and had a lot of company in our parish, in our circle of friends, on the campus where my children went. It was a good buzz of excitement. I could almost feel again that spirit of wise men hoping. But I said, now it's all gone, and it seems to have turned sour. Was his vision all wrong? Are we prematurely nostalgic? Are we getting bothered about recent good old days? Hardly. If we look around, we'd have to say that much in our vision is collaborating in our own experience. Sometimes we look at what's left in not only the Catholic, but also the Protestant churches. It's almost as if the membership can be pictured as so many little tiny bones clinging to a screen, and then somebody held up the screen to the wind and shook it, and what's left clinging there is often the most insecure kind of person who clings most tightly. Or to change our picture, maybe after all the changes, what's left are the pillars of the institution. But not the pillars that actually supported the work of the Spirit so much as the pillars that simply allowed an edifice to stand. While we are delighted by the hundreds of thousands of exceptions to this generalization, we have to say that in alternating cases, what stuck or what held up in the bones on the screen or the pillars of our two pictures turn out to be very often the differences in the conservative forces in the church. It's often been pointed out that the right wing ethnic Catholic or the lower class white or black Protestant have nowhere else to go for the fulfillment of his or her purposes in life than to stay inside the circle of these churches. Sometimes these churches must be rather effectively proven, sometimes ineffectively, sometimes effectively because they don't change, and sometimes ineffectively because they do. But there is at least a kind of a joyless participation of the people slightly to the right of center, while, as has also been pointed out, most of the liquids came on the left. On the end of the spectrum that we've been calling or implying, whatever title, Christian liberalism. At this point that we now see creeping apathy and galloping exhaustion and enthusiastic failure of nerve and passion and disappointment. And really, we don't even see even that, because so many of the people have left. If the right wing has no place else to go, the matter at least had room to escape into the secular world, into new fashions or times or whatever. But look at the American sentiment then, looking back on a small system that is held, a nation state war, better wall still high, and all the gaps bridged. That pointed to the clear to all of us. Nothing seemed to be working. And also knew that the volcanoes were serious, and all the things of heavens cohered, but not divided or diminished. And all the contrary. The World Council of Churches, the National Council of Churches, the circles of theologians, the very fervent for racial integration, given it up to appearance, or divided and fell apart, or disappeared. Of course, history occurred in wars of acting, and this didn't matter in this world, but in some of those moments of hope and promise, came from the bad times, there was no assertion of power. The ruthless people, those of whom one of our contested characters calls a generation born from the middle, there is no other thing. It's the speaks of as the all-encompassing immensity of the mentality will continue. Bureaucrats in the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your job. But that is the prevailing style of liberal public officials throughout the decade, chiefly the issues of their ability to take on this crippled ship of state. It's the sign that we've come to know. They will look for ecclesiastic leadership among people who won't rock the boat, or precisely among people who won't have a vision. Some people say that's the best thing that can happen. We can borrow time as a generation seeks its style. Others would say, far more honest is the suggestion that demagogues will exploit situations of apathy and exhaustion on the left. Even though a state of backlash may be over because there's almost no left to flash back the best, one can still find the specter of the left in the church and outside the church. Because the left has to stay covered, or now disintegrating, while everyone else crowds at the center, a center which doesn't necessarily represent a golden line there, but a sphere of mediocrity. It's hard to look at the religious and the political scene without recognizing the degree of this disintegration of the liberal cause. It's the liberal books in theology and ethics that are in crisis, while fundamentalism at least seems to be working its way. It is the liberal private bones and foundations that have turned off to other kinds of causes, sometimes almost entirely non-religious, and then non-religious, often non-political. But now, in their work, picking up the pieces, but only representative of what they had been doing. It is the liberal bureaus and boards and the massive bureaucracies that have been cut into, maybe for the world's good, for the amount of revenue, and they too have distorted the personal causes to which they devoted, before the port of arrival at the centers. Wolf was strongly among the conservative churches and the conservative movements. The religious journeys of the moderate left to left have great difficulty surviving. The money, says one of the big men who provides money, as well as our own rent. One of the activities and air forces, one of the folk and Pentecostal movements, seem to be all right. Though I believe I should take a second look at some of them and see some other signs present. A big fundraising goes on in the southwest of the country, where people will invest in a formal system and keeping it going and distorting the views of the left. The Reader's Digest can sell out 19 million copies of the distorted story earlier in the decade, and be believed and be out for years to come. But Christian liberalism is an important and ominous force, but it really came far too many years too late to be believable in our terms. One of those is necessary for any regrouping Christian liberals to take a careful look at the claims for Christian conservatism. Unfortunately, left wing in the case isn't that strong. Unfortunately, I say, because much of Christian liberalism has lived off discontinued second generation conservatism. But unfortunately, the concerns of Christian conservatism can also be a miracle to human good. My liberal bias may be shown, but in any case, it's important for the liberals to make accurate assessments of what's left of conservatism, and to be sure that they don't underestimate the problems of life in the secular and the pluralist world, that is, those who are more sectarian, more fundamentalist, more fanatic, go on the following simply by asking people more decisively to turn their back on the world. So the conservatives have trouble of their own internal disputes as well as external pressures. We need not take spirit or joy from it. Perhaps one of the things that the links from which liberalism recruits are themselves thinning out. It's in all these terms that we believe it's proper to speak of the end of our style of Christian liberalism, or at least of its eclipse, its being shadowed. The old optimism is gone, the old alliances are broken apart. And yet, as attractive as self-help and anarchism and self-collaboration may be in our day, is a luxury that we can hardly afford. We're not given a temporary mission, we're only given part of one. To say it's the basic questions of whether human nature should be changed in a laboratory now that genetic tampering is possible. This is the time when we have to do that kind of fundamental thinking and ethics. What will Christian conservatism provide the base for it? We're not given temporary missions, we're not even given half of the present one, to work on part of the pollution and overpopulation and other factors which can lead for human development and the experience of life under God. Such a luxury to indulge ourselves all the reporting and the varying liberties of the air forces that we have determined to change the formal system to penetrate the cities and the structures, the ships, the forms, the distorts of power for the sake of the neighbor and the way to save Christ. We haven't devoted ourselves here to a style of liberty. We haven't seen the worst fascist demagogues that keep liberals from doing what they ought to do. We haven't even seen the liberals in the rebellions. We don't need to look for scapegoats or even evidence of the problem. Perhaps we can just say not all tyrannies are good for all causes. The last guy is finished last. But we can't, in the forms of criticism, ask whether it may be that liberalism, many churches have been over-tied to discredited and impoverishing forms of politics. The alliance that Protestant Christian liberalism of the days of Reinhold Niebuhr made with early Cold War policies in the early 1950s melted the Protestant witness in a different kind of situation came out in the war in Vietnam. How difficult it was for people to break into alliance and to speak a new Christian or judgmental word. It would be remarkable if we were to find something to criticize, I saw a little fellow come out of the car just a little while. He was quite lovely this day. Of course, I have to go back to the question of criticism, however, because we're able to conclude by promising the action in which people can pick up the pieces. Once again, a state scholar of his world with a liberal bias is shown. Who says there are pieces to pick up? Who says the victory has to have even moderately happy endings? To that, we can also say we don't have in our hearings how victory plays out. The villains in our hearings, the freedom to aspire to the noble friends. So let's pick up picking up the pieces and see what picking up the pieces really means. First of the tasks before us would be complete reappraisal of the theology that has been behind the old Christian liberalism. Could it be that even though it was born of a transcendent age, it had compromised this by putting such a high premium on political activity and political alliance? Could it be that God had been drawn down to size, taken captive just as much in Christian liberalism as he ever had been in Christian pietism? At which time we ought to ask, are there distinctive ways that Christians can bear to ascend to a cause? And recall, once given an address on Christian radicalism and national priorities, at the end of which a man who identified himself as an Arianist got up and said, "You thought you were being very radical, didn't you? You did it entirely outside the existing set of political options. The Protestant today that you didn't even mention Jesus. Well, it's so radical, and it wouldn't even show up on the spectrum." One moment of a creative word of judgment, temple preaching was taken. Christian liberalism often forgot the fact that we should be fools for Christ, that we should be improbable, that we should take on tasks that thereafter can't be resolved. And we can do this even if we don't control history. Who ever said, in the name of Christ, that one picks up a cause only if there's a good chance of winning? The second of the elements in our kind of reconstruction would have to be a recognition of the old style of Christian liberalism, which we moved into the decade before our own, was not very often by our personality. Sometimes we've had to refer to the fact that much of this impulse became located in bureaus and boards and administrative units. We are in no position to criticize the importance of institutions or bureaucracies, but we are in a position to note that when those became the main repository, something else may very well have been lost. If we then have to look for simple forms in our time, ways in which regard for each person, both the ways of very old and very new lives, regard for the soul is operative. There's great power here, as we've seen very well in Christian history, where someone believes deeply, and he or she is mastered too creatively, a whole new range of power is turned loose. In our time, when national, denominational, and religious orders, boards, and bills suffer, and we can no longer work through them, maybe we are at the stage again where the individual and the cell can do more. And even in the process, we can be better off for it, because we haven't played into the realms of the all-embracing administrative mentality. Whether it has done any part to humanize the technological and the political order. So we'll be on the one hand more open to the transcendent and judgmental word of God, and we will on the other hand be more personal and more concerned with soul. Next, I'm sure we're going to have to be content with what I like to call a period of creative formlessness. Those of us who are historians or reporters know that we are being asked again and again to point to a clear sign, a resolution. We're working out of a problem to some sort of simple solution that other people can now use to copy. I'm embarrassed at how seldom I can do that in recent years. There have been times in a career that's even too long already, where one could point almost immediately to certain shapes and directions and have some confidence that they worked out well, and look back and find out that we did point to the right things. But our kind of creative form is simply going through that very familiar kind of thing that Thomas Kuhn points to in the world of the sciences. Our old paradigms and our old models are breaking apart. I have to say we're too far into a cultural revolution to have the old forms really work, but we're far enough in to know exactly what the new ones should be. it must take heart for the kind of little eruptions of creativity to go on where once upon a time Krista Weber was always a creative, visible force. Moreover, how important it might be to learn from the really organized form to the best of yourself. But much of the biblical impetus for children of ours occurs apart from the elaborate philosophy of the history of music, more in which to remember simply the concrete human before us. I think the fact that the Bible uses the language of the widow and the orphan and the hungry child, the naked and the imprisoned and the lonely and the ill-fated, is not simply because that was a one-to-one personal agrarian world, but because no matter what kind of world it was, and it was also an urban world full of principalities and powers and complex political structures, when we can notice that the only way for the gift to be authentic is if the giver is authentic. For the act to be done is for the person who deserves the act to be done. Authenticity then is born of an active agent and a concrete other human being. And this can be recovered in our time. It may well be that I write the history of the people who ruled the world in our time. It may be those who make up a special kind of ministry to the explorative of Appalachia, to the inland back who ministered to another back in the middle of the ghetto, to people in homes for the aged who took care of each other, to young people who regrouped on campuses without any kind of movement. To this I would add, in a sense of reconstruction, and add to a fair context in which the struggles will occur. And it's pointed to the problems in the formal system to which the bumper sticker is witness. It's pointed to all of the difficulties. But we are a little thoughtful, and we often become thoughtful only if we leave the country for a period of time, we don't recognize that something of the kind of thing we speak of as the promise of American life could still be operative through all the faults. Moreover, even with the great big messy church might represent here and there centers of learning and integration and personal acceptance and social change through which one can work. But the people who make up the majority of the citizens or the constituency of nation and church or voluntary associations will not act in response to a fashion or shelter who doesn't affirm something of their heritage, and so this affirmation will have to occur. All of this, I suppose, has come some networking of priorities based on a study of values. Could it be the Christian liberalism too often was really too late? At the time when the budgets were set up, we criticized them. At the time when the Karen's reward, we tried to silence them. Instead of working more simply with persons and groups, and with our soul and spirit, and most of all, values to realize the world. This calls for a quiet and automatic and non-pull work. It has come fast enough to make all the changes that have to be made, but it's better than nothing. This kind of liberalized open Christian spirit, though we even like to perpetuate the word Christian liberalism for, will run better recruits. I can't sit by passively and simply work with the leftover middle generation people who can only ask about the way there was a movement and it has worked. It has to be by stone and the size of new ideas, because it was on the level of those ideas that so much had fallen apart. And then I asked myself criticism of the other audience of those that the book had on. In fact, it all works to suggest to people who call themselves Christian liberals or radicals to take up causes in support of which emerging events of their own. Couldn't be that the American Christian liberal opposed the war in Vietnam not simply because he cared about napalm killing there, but also because he cared about the way he could embarrass or criticize our own society. Couldn't one ask the world profit from supporting certain men as poor and exploited? And shouldn't one also engage in that kind of activity? In the middle of all this, we've implied, I suppose, that Christian liberalism, just like Christian fundamentalism, can live the Christ in the interest of system and movement. The Christ is the beginning, the end, and the center of history, and it's known to be found in him. It is also the finisher of the faith. The Christian came to the center of the Christian story, only in order to get a social plot or a social program the nature that the Bible or the Christian tradition possesses. But rather, Michael has defined a subversion that bears a kind of paradoxical relationship to every culture and every movement, whose ends of the law in order to be able to serve them, the place of programmed and only a sought person. This calls to a promote free alliance with man's goodwill in the world. The assessment of the kind we have just undertaken inevitably has a kind of a sociological bias. It also seems to begin and end by a recognition of this empirical situation, recognizing about the way things are going in the world and church. What is it that we might now again be reminded of Pascal's word that the church will be in its best kind of circumstance when it has nothing in which to rely except the promises of God? This is true, but most of the call of Christian liberalism is in a better moment now than it knows.